Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
You're a pilgrim.
Dear listener, welcome to the Late Night Alternative. Last show of the week. I'm Ian Lee. Who are you?
Catherine Boyle.
Oh, very, very, very exciting. You can call us, of course you can, 0344 4991000. But or you might just want to sit back and relax, as we've got live on the phone, it's Robin Asquith. Hey, Robin, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Ian. Sat here perched on the edge of a cliff.
God, don't do it, Robin. Don't do it.
Metaphorically and literally.
Yeah, that was... Now... When we get a guest on, I always like to have a little dig around and see if someone's, if they've ever done a record. Was that you just singing?
Yes, it was. It was written by Ray Cameron and produced by Ray Cameron, who's Michael McIntyre's father.
No.
It was written by him. I was doing Confessions of a Holiday Camp, I think, at the time, and they. Yeah. People said, you know, why haven't you done? You know, Eric Hall, the football agent.
Monster.
Him. He really said, oh, come on, you've got to make a record, this, that, and the other. And Mike King from the King Brothers was another guy. Yeah. And that I said, yeah, there's one drawback here, I can't sing. And he said, no, that doesn't stop anyone. And so they wrote the song, banged me in the studio, and that was it. And I sang it live on the Mark Boland show, which was sensational.
What? Now, I'm aware of the Mark Boland show. This was this weird kind of... Mm. It was pop and rock and roll, but it was also like a kid's tea time show. David Bowie famously was on it, and you did it live.
Yeah, I did it live, because they just changed the rule that you couldn't mime. It must be changed again now. So you couldn't mime, which, of course, I thought, oh, no. And I was touring my... Confessions live show. So I was in Leeds. I had to go to Granada, which was in Manchester. And I was pooing myself because I thought, oh my God, I can't sing. I've got to sing. You know, because when you're in a studio, you double track things, you sing along to set tracks. You know, there's all sorts of things you can do. So I was wetting myself. And also, it was Mark Boland, for heaven's sake, who apparently quite liked me. And it was produced by, do you remember Pussycat Willem, before your time?
That's a little bit before my time, Grandad.
There was a children's show, and I can't think of her name now. The producer of Mark was the lady that used to operate Pussycat Willem and Fred Owl. Once again,
right,
before
okay.
your time. Anyway, so I went on, and you can see it on YouTube. There I am singing and dancing with girly dancers and stuff, and singing live.
Where are you right this thing? So you're on a mountain. Are you in Gozo?
Yeah, I'm in Gozo. I was over doing some. I did my pantomime, and then did some other bits and pieces. I was doing my one man show all over the place, and then something I did with Stuart Lee, which I can mention in a minute. And then I thought, oh, I'll just come back here. Then I got locked down. You know, that's the end of it. I was supposed to be in the UK this week. But that's why I phoned you, contacted you and some other radio people. Because usually you only go on the radio when you're plugging something. And I thought, and people like yourself always say, oh, you must come back, you must come back, it doesn't matter. And you never do, because you've always got to have something to plug. Well, I've got nothing to plug.
Beautiful.
I'm sat on the cliff here phoning radio presenters.
What is... I've got my friend Catherine here as well, who's doing the show with
me. Hey, Robin.
Hello,
very nice to
darling.
Meet you.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Did you see how his tone changed?
He did a bit.
He's all chirpy chappy with me. Hello, darling. Nice to see you.
Well, no, it's because I don't know her. I know you. You've come into a house that I was staying in and poured coffee all over me. We've shared liquids.
You remember that? We did share
liquids. I can't do that anymore.
That was one of the most embarrassing things. I get invited to the house you're staying in, and we're having a chat, and I just poured coffee all over the place. It was
everywhere.
Awful.
That means
everywhere.
He likes
all
you,
over
Robin.
The table, sofa, me, you. I thought it was something you did to sort of provoke a reaction.
I was surprised. It wasn't that bad, but you insisted we both take our trousers off, which I thought was a little excessive.
No, well, it was good, and it was good radio.
It was good fun. It was good bonding. So what? I don't know Gozo, but as someone I used to work with years and years ago, Leo Martin, yeah, who works on the 11 o'clock show and stuff, she's over there a lot. But I don't know what Gozo is. Is it an island?
Yeah, well, yes, it's an island off Malta. And
right.
I first came here in 1969. I was doing a commercial with Ridley Scott, who I'd just done a commercial for Summer County, and he said, oh, I'm doing another one with my brother, Tony Scott, for Thompson Sky Tours. It involves driving beach buggies a la Steve McQueen on a beach and snogging girls. We thought it'd be your cup of tea. And I have no idea, Kath, why that would be.
I've seen your films, mate. Don't pull that one.
You asked Samir Ahmed. I'm a beta male. So I came over to Malta to do the filming, and somebody brought me on a speedboat over to Gozo, and I just fell in love with the place all those years back. And wherever I've been and stayed and gone to in the world, I've always come back here, and I've lived here for 27 years.
Now, we were emailing a bit. And it's so nice. I was so thrilled when you emailed, and I texted Kathy. Robin wants to come on the show, and of course, without a moment's hesitation. And I said, all the other shows are doing. You could die of this, and you must not go out.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
No, and I said, well, you know, what we're doing is we're entertaining the troops. You know, this is
correct,
kind of our wartime effort. I'm George Formby, and Kathy's Gracie Fields. And you went, oh, I've got a Gracie Fields story. Can you tell it on the radio?
Pardon?
Can you tell it on the radio?
Most probably not, but I'm going to.
Here we go. I love it.
It's a great story. I've just followed you, by the way, Kath, on Twitter now, because I'm addicted to the bloody...
I shall follow you back.
That's of any interest. That's got nothing to do with this at all. But no, it was a friend of mine got to know David Niven very well. And David Niven was a womaniser and very popular with the ladies. And this lady friend of mine told me this wonderful story. He was having dinner in Monaco with Prince Rainier. Was it Prince Rainier or King Rainier? What was he? Prince Rainier, who was also a womaniser and ran Monaco and everything else, and at the time, of course, had married Grace Kelly. And Prince Rainier leant across to David Niven and said, listen, you have slept with more women than even me, you know. Tell me honestly, David, who is the best in bed of all of them? And there was a pause, and David Niven went, oh, that's easy. It was Grace C. Fields. Isn't that brilliant?
There is no autobiography finer than The Moon's a Balloon.
Mine, which
is the second finest, of course. Yes.
Hey?
Yours is the second finest, just after Moon's a Balloon, yes.
Well, funny enough, to write, you have to read. That's the way that's how it works. So to write the book I had to write, I read Moon's a Balloon, Bring on the Empty Horses. I read some Nick Hornby, Stephen Fry, and all sorts of other stuff, a lot of autobiographies. But nothing got me in the mood more than Moon's a Balloon. It's absolutely sensational. And allegedly written by himself.
Yeah, it's relentless. And every now and then you read a bit and you go, well, this may be made up, but who cares? But the anecdote about David Niven that I always tell my boys, and I don't, my boys who are 10 and 8, is the bit where he's out skiing and he has a pee and he gets frostbite in his willy and he has to ski down a mountain to a bar and gets a glass of brandy and just puts his dick in the brandy to stop the frostbite.
Your cock over out. There's something in there.
Carpet Martin has tweeted us saying, this is very bossy. Get Robin to tell the Zeffirelli story.
I can't tell that on the radio.
Can you not?
Well, I can, but he's dead, of course, now, so you can say what you like. And when you write an autobiography, the first thing the lawyers say to you is make a dead list. And you say, what do you mean? Well, whoever you're writing about who's dead, because basically you can say anything rather amazingly about anyone that's dead, but when they're alive, you can't. So I've always had to go very, very careful. But I know this Carpet Martin. It's on a radio station, isn't he? Riverside.
Yeah, he's good. He's a funny guy. Yeah, very funny guy.
Yeah, but he came to my stand-up quite recently, and obviously where he's picked this up from. And it's quite a complicated story, but it led to, it drops all sorts of names. But basically, it starts with me making a film called Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, directed by Franco Zeffirelli, and it was a miserable experience. We were all monks, and Peter Firth, Mickey Feast, Ken Cranham, Lee Lawson, there was a whole load of us all dressed up as monks, being thoroughly miserable, wafting around Gubbio and Assisi, because it was about St. Francis of Assisi, and getting stoned. And in any case, things would happen. We were staying in this monastery, and things would happen untoward, which nowadays you'd mostly be able to take someone to court and make a great deal of money out of it. But things were happening that weren't particularly of my sexual interest, let's put it like that. And it became most disturbing. And a great actor, writer, Bruce Robinson, who wrote Withnell and I, and the film is about him, had warned me, because he was on Romeo and Juliet, that all this might happen. I think I'm swerving around this quite well here.
You're doing it wonderfully.
Yeah, and so I had enough of it, and eventually, with the help of the props guys and everything, I escaped in a lorry to Rome Airport. I actually ran away from a film escaped and got to Heathrow Airport, and I mean, obviously, in the live stage version, I can go into a lot more detail. But at the airport, I'm stopped, and I had a purple pair of loons on trousers, a T-shirt. I was very skinny because I'd taken so much weight, and I also had a tonsure. And so I looked quite odd. And the customs man said, I just want to go through your stuff here in the case. And I said, yeah, go on. I was just so pleased to be back in England. And so he opened the case and went through. He said, what's this then? And it was a matchbox with some roaches in. And he said, what's this then? I said, oh, no. I said, well, it's nothing. I said, it's cannabis resin, sir. I said, well, it might have been, but it's not anymore. You know, it's just the ends of a thing. Oh, all right, so I'd come through, and he took me through to another room. He bent me over the table and put a rubber glove on and did a bit more exploring. And I turned around and said, you know, it's funny thing, life. I said, but I've just been avoiding this for the last 3 months. And that gives you the rough tone of the story, that gets to the punchline. But there's a little bit more, which is a few days later, I get a call from a strange call, unintelligible Italian accent. Hello, Robin Asquith. I said, yes, who is this? He said, my name is Pier Paolo Pasolini. And I said, oh,
and whoa! You can't say that, Sam! Don't! Can't you can't that. Drop an F-bomb!
Oh, no, F-off. Oh, right, F-off. F-off.
You can't. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Apologies to the people watching on YouTube. Go on.
Oh, I see. Of course, bloody I forgot about that. No.
We're on the radio!
Oh, of course. Yeah, but they're watching on YouTube. It's too complicated. I'm just, listen, I'm poised on the end of a cliff. It's too complicated for me to understand any of it.
Come on,
I was
all
doing
right.
So well. I apologise for that. That will not happen
all
again.
Right, don't worry. We got it.
I told you this story would end in tears. Anyways, but yep. That's how I met, very fortunately, Pier Paolo Pasolini, because it was Pier Paolo Pasolini who hated Zeffirelli and rather liked the fact that I'd run away from him.
Oh.
And that's how I became to be in Canterbury Tales.
Robin, do I remember correctly? Because it was a while that we met. Did you meet Jimi Hendrix?
Yes.
Didn't you? Go on, give us that one again. I love it.
But listen, do you know what I thought you might do tonight as a surprise?
Go on.
I thought you might get our mutual friend on the phone.
Oh, Leo Martin. I've not spoken to Leo.
No, Mickey Dolenz.
I could have got Mickey on the phone. Of course I could have got Mickey on the phone.
I thought, because I know how clever you are, I thought I'd suddenly be going, hey there, Robin. I thought he was going to be there.
For those who've never heard Mickey speak, let me tell you, that's a surprisingly good impression. Because you would have been at ITV, I'm going to guess 82, 83, when he was doing Metal Mickey, and
correct.
You were doing Bottle Boys, I suppose.
Correct. But we were introduced in the 70s by a guy called David Bell, who was the head of Light Entertainment at London Weekend, who said that there's two guys that should ever get together. It's Robin Asquith and Mickey Dolenz. And to be honest, we hated each other because there's nothing worse than being told you get on with somebody comedically and everything. But then we became firm friends and still are to this day. But we never actually did anything, rather sadly. And we had a great idea for a television series, which now would be called Mrs. Brown's Boys. It was the two of us larking around in a television studio with the cameras, going in and out of a situation comedy, which, of course, was laughed out of the studio. That was our idea, and it was turned down. But you're right, then a few years later, he was doing Metal Mickey at the same time I was doing Bottle Boys.
You two working... Because here's one of the things about... indulge me, dear listener, on a slightly geeky monkeys chat. A, he's got a brilliant voice.
Fantastic.
But people forget, he's a great actor as well. He's a really funny actor.
I know. Hi there. He's terrific. No, he's terrific all round. And he just had enough of everything. You know all this, but for the people listening, he'd had enough of everything. The monkeys were sort of sinking a little bit, and there was a lot of... and he didn't know what to do. So he came to England, and he married... a lovely lady called Trina, had three daughters, and through that whole era, that sort of 10 years, he and I were pretty inseparable.
Wow.
And he became very English. He took up polo, he bought a hall, he had a tennis court, and a sports pavilion, which was called the Asquith Pavilion, where we put all our, you know, squash things and tennis rackets, and he became like the lord of the manor. But we never actually were together. But that's right. We were at London Weekend together, and under David Bell, if you'll excuse the expression, and John Burt, rather bizarre.
Wow, that building's gone now. They're turning that building into flats or a hotel or something.
I know.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Talk Radio.
So Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Because I know Kath wants to hear about Jimi.
Of course I do.
Don't sound sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic.
No, I feel like Kath has nodded off.
No. I'm mesmerised.
Again, you're sounding sarcastic.
I'm northern. This is how I sound.
Oh, I apologise.
Well, I'm northern. I'm from Southport.
Are you? My granny's in Southport.
Who did?
My grandma.
Do you know her?
No, you wouldn't.
No, my grandmother used to live in Southport.
She lived in Banks.
Road.
Oh, there we go.
You're not related. Wouldn't this be something?
No, my grandma... My grandma was from Salford, and she went out there as a pensioner.
Right, okay, okay.
As many do.
Okay. Tell us the bloody Hendrix story, Asquith.
Oh, yeah, Hendrix. No, so I was making a film in Hollywood. It was called Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates. I played Hans Brinker, the main part. And I was about 19, and John Gregson was my father. Eleanor Parker was my mother. Fantastic cast. Richard Basehart played this doctor. He was fantastic to work with. You know, 19 to work with all these people was amazing. But a whole section of it was shot in Studio Hamburg. And I think we were like in Studio Hamburg for about 16 weeks. It was a huge shoot. And a lot of singing and dancing on ice as well. We had to train how to ice skate and dance. And as a treat, because we worked so hard, the producer said, we're going to take you to see Jimi Hendrix tonight at the whatever Halle in Hamburg, which would have been one of his last performances, actually. And so we were sat on the front. Now, he'd been told there's these actors, Hollywood actors coming and would come backstage to meet him afterwards. And so I was taken backstage by this gorgeous sort of girl with a split skirt and a reeking of cigarettes and all sorts. I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. And we were taken backstage, and there was Jimi Hendrix with his purple pair of trousers and sort of women sort of draped off him and a spliff the size of it was a Camberwell carrot, you know, it was a real with Nell and I jobby. And he's gone, hey, Mr. Brinker man, to me, have a talk on this. Now, I really hardly drink and hardly do, you know, that I really am quite very well behaved, but of course you can't say no, it's Jimi Hendrix.
No.
So I got very stoned with Jimi Hendrix, who then confused me with Brian Jones. He thought I was who he knew, but he got so stoned he thought I was Brian. So he was going, hey dude, Brian, you know, because I can't play any instruments at all. So we were going off to these clubs in Hamburg, as with Jimi Hendrix, but having to avoid playing any instrument because I couldn't play any instrument. And Brian Jones, as you know, could practically play every instrument. So yeah.
You did have a look of the Brian Jones about you when you were a young man.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I suppose if you're stoned, it's even more so.
Hey?
Yeah, I suppose if you're if someone's stoned, you look even more like Brian Jones.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it's particularly then, you know, stoned and young, and definitely.
How are you doing, Robin? Just for a second, to get a little bit current, because I know that you kind of got some ideas about this. What is Gozo in lockdown? Because we're not really allowed to leave our homes at the moment, unless an emergency. What's the situation?
Why do you think
there?
I'm phoning radio presenters that I know?
Are you going crazy?
I'm going crazy. No, we are in lockdown, and we're a tiny little island, and as yet have no cases at all. Because the only way you can get onto this island is by a little ferry, and we're not letting anyone on and not letting anyone off.
Brilliant.
And so I wave goodbye to Tracy, who introduced me to you via the Twitter account, which
she
ran
Twitter,
in those days. And that's how I got to know you, Ian. And she left. It was like the last scene of Casablanca. She's gone. One of the last planes out of here. And I'm stuck here. But to be fair, there's been no... there's cases in Malta, about 300, but no deaths. And on Gozo, none at all. But we are locked down. But
you trained for this as a kid. Were you in an iron lung?
Yeah, well, I am. I'm no stranger to pandemics. When I was four. The polio was rife, and particularly rife, Cat, in the northwest of England, as your gran will tell you. And mind you, I'm sure we went out with your gran, as Ian said. But
I think she's a bit older than you, Robin. But I not by much.
wouldn't have stopped him.
I was very. I don't know whether I've got this picture that I found, and my Twitter account, as you most of you know, is just fun, and it's celebratory, and it's just funny anecdotes and waffle. But I found this picture today, actually, of me and my friend David sitting at Rotten Row in Southport by the pond. And we both swam in that pond. 3 weeks later, he was dead, and I was in an iron lung. I was in hospital for 9 months and came out in a wheelchair and was told I would never, ever walk again. And so get over it. You wonder at the time how careful people were. They obviously weren't. They didn't know how it was being caught. It was rife. And if you're stupid enough to Google iron lungs, you'll see pictures of rows and rows of people. We look like chickens with their heads poked out.
It's an incredible sight.
In other words, to answer your question, yes, I'm quite well prepared for self-isolation, having been shoved in a room for 9 months.
And what are you doing, apart from harassing radio hosts?
Yeah.
What are you? Are you watching films? Are you reading? What are you doing?
I'm reading. I'm reading Max Hastings' The History of Vietnam, which I've always wanted to read, which is a long book and needs a bit of concentration. I've now got time for that. I'm reading Jonathan Coe's What a Carve Up. I've got a few going on at the same time. A couple of Tintin books going.
Brilliant.
And I'm feeding cats and rescuing them, as I always do. And in fact, I was bitten quite badly by one of these cats just before all this happened and had all the injections and stuff. So,
well, you can probably hear some banging in the background. That'll be two of my four cats are dicking around like idiots. My two youngest cats have just been done, and one's just had her,
cone.
The cone taken off her.
She's making the most of it.
She is. So they're running around like absolute idiots tonight. What are you doing, Pats?
How many cats you got?
I've got four. I had five, but my girl, who was nearly 21, passed away recently, so I'm down to four now. I love it.
21.
They're the best. Yeah, nearly 21.
21.
Proper old lady. It was wonderful. But with my velvet. She passed away a little while ago, and so I've got.
But you must have had. I'm not quite sure how old you are, but you've all your life.
May God bless you, Robin. May God bless you.
No, but a lot of your life,
I had her for about 19 years. So I knew her before I met my wife, before I had my kids, and basically, you know, they're the best companions. I like dogs. I don't really get them. Cats. Mm.
I'm the same.
I was saying to Kath this evening, these cats, we're in their house. We're their playground.
Yeah. No, I love them. I disappear, as you know, for whole periods of time. People think, where the hell's he gone? But I, you know, have a really good life, and because I do a lot of sailing as well. That's the other thing I do. But I was rescuing. I remember I was rescuing this cat under a particularly oily lorry. It ran under this lorry near the harbour here, and Robson Green was filming something here, and I don't know Robson Green, and I chased this cat and to try and cook, 'cause it had a bad eye and it needed catching and taking to the vet and sorting out. So I got underneath this truck, this lorry, and got covered in oil. And the vet, and these terrible noises, I scratched. And I've come out of this, of underneath this lorry with a screaming cat covered in oil. And I was covered in oil. And Robson Green looked up and said, I can't impersonate his voice. He said, I always wonder what happened to Robin Asquith. and I thought that's just great, you know. I wish Twitter or something was around then, because I would have gotten to take a picture. And,
what was the thing you're doing with Stuart Lee? I love Stuart Lee, and the two of you working together seems an odd one.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, and Stuart being Stuart, he likes to be seen with me more and more because he knows it causes it causes controversy. He loves it. It's great. We had lunch the other day and waffling on and chatting away about this, that, and the other. And he's got this theory. He said, you know why you are a legend? I said, I don't consider anything in those terms. He said, no, I'll tell you why you're a legend, in a Stuart Lee voice. He said, because to be a legend, you have to be famous, but you have to get through being a has-been.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a brilliant way of putting it.
So, no, Stuart, what's happened is, do you know the band The Nightingales?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Stuart's. I won't call him Stu because it's Stuart, but he calls himself Stu, but it's Stuart, and he's very friendly with Robert Lloyd, and he's making a film. He found the Nicholas Monroe King Kong sculptor, the statue that was plonked in the middle of Birmingham. I think it was in the 70s when they were donating statues and pieces of works of art to cities, and they could keep them for 6 months to see how they sat, and then the city could buy them or chuck them away. And Birmingham chose to chuck away this King Kong statue, and Stuart found this statue in some dump or somewhere. He found it lying by a river or something, and he thought this was a huge sort of allegorical tale of Birmingham and Robert Lloyd. You know, Birmingham was famous for having iconic figures and throwing them out. So he's made this film called King Rocker about Robert Lloyd, and I have had some involvement with Robert Lloyd.
Oh, brilliant.
Nude, naked involvement with Robert Lloyd,
of course,
which fascinated Stuart, and we've done some filming, and I'm told it's quite funny. So that's
just googling Robert Lloyd nude.
Doesn't Robin sound young?
Yeah, he really does.
I'm normally very good, Robin, at guessing people's ages from their voices. I would never guess that you're over 70.
Yeah, well, I'm not over 70. That's why.
I'm teasing. You sound like a 34-year-old.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel like a 34-year-old, actually.
Good.
I got most disturbed when my age group is referred to locally as the elderly. I can't just don't see it. You know, we're trying to protect the elderly, and I'm going, yeah, as I go and take food parcels to my neighbours around here, which I do. You know, I go, is anything
Kath,
you need?
Tell Robin about what your dad said.
Yeah, my dad's 65, and he said, I was thinking, I really must do something for the older chaps around here. And he said, and I thought through the neighbours, and I realised I was the older chap.
But Robin, I love you. I love you so much. Thank you so much for getting in touch. When this madness is over, and it will end, we will come out the other side. Let's come over, come in the studio. Let's all go out for a meal or something.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great.
And
I want to look in Kath's eyes to see if she's nodded off or if she's genuinely quite interested in my waffle.
Robin, I'm very interested, Robin.
You're such a lovely man, and you're so kind. And thank you so much for sending that email. I was absolutely thrilled, and I look forward to seeing you again, mate.
It's been a blast. I love talking to you both. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. We should probably take a break. We've missed two. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.